In March 2021, the U.S. House of Representatives passed HB 1, titled For the People, designed to combat voter suppression by state legislatures. That has yet to pass the Senate. Meanwhile, 47 out of 50 states are considering or have passed more voting restrictions. One of them is Texas, where 48% of the electorate voted for Biden in 2020, and 19 black women judges were elected to the bench in 2019. The following program from the Wings Archives presents women playing the long game to reclaim their state.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Hi, I'm Frieda Worden, the series producer of Wings. I live in Canada, but I come from Texas. Recently, I went back to hang out with friends and got invited to the Texas Democratic Women's statewide convention. Their keynote speaker was Mary Beth Rogers, former campaign manager for the very last Democrat to be governor of the state, Ann Richards. Mary Beth had just released a book called Turning Texas Blue, advising how the Democrats could win back the government if they recognize changing demographics, communicate about what matters to people, and work really hard. Here's just a taste of her keynote address.
In the 20 years since Ann Richards lost the governor's race to George W. Bush, we've watched ordinary, business-oriented, conservative Republicans morph into crackpots and blustery buffoons. They are so obsessed with the notion of government as enemy that they exhibit a willful indifference to human suffering. All of us are sick and tired of living under the big red Republican bubble. Well, the good news is that bubble of hot air is beginning to spring a few leaks, and we've got to figure out a way to stop them before they inflict any more damage.
Mary Beth Rogers, author of Turning Texas Blue, speaking to the Texas Democratic Women's Convention in February 2016. Emma Preciado is a member of Texas Democratic Women from Tarrant County, Texas.
What do you think are the prospects for turning Texas blue?
Demographically, we know that that's eventually going to happen. I'm just very impatient. I want it to happen now. I want it to happen soon. And my passion is trying to get Latinos more involved and actually getting out to vote, encouraging them to vote early.
Well, there's Latinos in the Republican primary. Just because they're Latinos doesn't mean they'll vote Democratic.
That's correct. And unfortunately, we have a few folks who may vote for them because they have a Hispanic surname, not really reading or listening to their platforms, knowing what they're all about. The Latino community is sometimes a little bit divided because we have a conservative side. Many of us are Catholic, so there are a few conservative issues that Latinos tend to lean to. But of course, immigration reform, the economy, education, women's rights, those are all everyone's interests. So I'm just very hopeful trying to get more people involved and using the media, the TV, of course, radio, social media. A lot goes on Facebook in the Spanish community. So we just need to get people knowledgeable in how the government works and what's in their best interests.
Emma Preciado, interviewed at the Texas Democratic Women's 2016 convention in Austin, Texas. The woman who brought me to that convention is Linda Jan Lewis from South Waco, Texas.
So Waco, it's pretty similar to Soweto. The wealthy live very well and the poor live very poorly. It's beginning to desegregate in 2016, and it's the home of Baylor University, so it's the Vatican City of Baptists in Texas and the United States. I left Waco in 1965, And I went to Austin and came to the University of Texas. I registered to vote because the summer that I went to freshman orientation, President Lyndon Johnson had just signed the Voting Rights Act. And I joined the Young Democrats. It changed my worldview because I graduated as the valedictorian of a segregated George Washington Carver High School in Waco. So this was my first experience with the sons and daughters of the power elite.
So you've been living with the Voting Rights Act, consciously living with it ever since it came into effect. What difference has it made?
It's made an incredible difference in my life and in the lives of African Americans and Hispanics and women. Prior to the Voting Rights Act, people of color had to pay a poll tax to go vote. And sometimes even if you paid your poll tax, if the all-white county officials didn't like your attitude or whatever, they would find a reason to prevent you from voting. My family's fifth generation Texan from the Stroud Plantation, and they hoped for the day that we'd be able to vote because we understood numbers.
Well, let's talk specifics about the Voting Rights Act. What's in it?
Well, the Voting Rights Act was necessary, and in several southern states, the act mandated that any changes in voting laws would have to be pre-cleared by the U.S. Justice Department. And, of course, the Supreme Court just gutted it, where that pre-clearance is no longer necessary. So, for instance, in Texas, as soon as we got the Supreme Court decision, our now Governor Greg Abbott, who was then Attorney General, enforced that in order to vote, you need a photo ID in Texas with its ever-changing demographics.
So is it difficult to get a photo ID? Doesn't everyone have a photo ID?
In order to get a photo ID, if you don't have a driver's license, you have to have certain documents such as birth certificates. And I'm from a generation where a lot of African Americans were born at home, delivered by a midwife. Their county courthouses have burned down. The county records were lost in floods. Another issue is we have high poverty in Texas. $35 may not mean much for someone who's employed, who has resources, but $35 is the water bill.
And that's what people have to pay to get a photo ID?
Yes.
So it's like a new poll tax.
Yes. And in the great state of Texas, student IDs are not considered a photo ID. If you are a student at any college or university in Texas, they have your social security number. You have applied to go there. You have been vetted. That is not an ID, but a concealed carry gun license is one of the acceptable IDs, photo IDs in Texas. That is voter suppression of this generation of millennials. They're the largest generations since we baby boomers, but you cannot use your student ID to vote in Texas.
What other requirements are there?
Well, the photo ID must be either a driver's license or a photo ID issued by the Texas Department of Public Transportation. In rural Texas, those locations are 100 to maybe 200 miles away from where people live in South Texas and rural Texas. In the big cities like Houston, it takes a four-hour bus ride to get to the Department of Public Safety to get a prescribed photo ID, and they must be the ones that issue them. And with the Republican cutbacks in Texas government, sometimes even if you rode a bus for 2 hours one way to go to the place and you get there, it may be a five-hour wait just to get the prescribed photo ID. Texas has boomed in population. And then there's also been a technology lag. The people who are getting the photo IDs, sometimes that information is not verified to the election officials because they mail you the ID.
So, there's bound to be somebody who thinks this is a really bad idea and is fighting it. How are they fighting it?
Well, it's state law, and the Texas legislature has been dominated by Republicans since George Bush beat Ann Richards for governor. And so Democrats in Texas are really taking a look at how to get back power. And the old coalitions are coming back together. And there is tremendous synergy between young people, women, the growing Hispanic population, and the Asian populations. The energy is there, and the demographics are on our side. And so we are working with raising the next generation and getting our majority back in the House and the Senate in Texas. And it's not going to happen in a couple of years, but it's on the way. We're looking at the governor's race in 2018.
But with the Voting Rights Act, you say the change was that they didn't have to pre-screen the change. But is there any way to go back to the federal government and say these changes are oppressive and discriminatory?
There is a case that will be on the docket for the Supreme Court to look at our law. Of course, the Mexican-American Legal Defense Fund, the ACLU, the NAACP, and a lot of voting right warriors have weighed in on it. So the Supreme Court could overturn Texas restrictive voter suppression laws, or we'd have to wait until the legislature meets in 2017 for a change in the law that could possibly be effect by fall of 2017.
Mm. So the election coming up in 2016, the chances of anything actually being changed before then are, what, almost nil?
Almost nil. You know, it's possible that the Supreme Court could rule this summer on this issue, and so for the November election, the law would be overturned. So we're just hopeful.
Now, one thing you didn't discuss much with respect to this voting rights bill is about how it affects women.
The Texas voter laws say the name on the driver's license photo ID has to match the name on the voter rolls. And I say to people, do you know any women? We change our hair often. So we change our names sometimes through divorce, through just deciding I want to use my maiden name or whatever. So there have been those discrepancies. The Texas Secretary of State issued some clarifying information saying that if the names are similar, but we know stories of women who have been turned away from voting because the name on the voter rolls didn't match the name on the photo ID.
And of course that would be up to the voting official actually standing before you when you go to vote?
To make that determination. In Texas, we have an organization called Annie's List. It's the Texas Emily's List. Promotes women and getting involved in the political process. And so one of the women from Annie's List has many stories of how women did not get to vote because the driver's license may have the married name, the voter roll may have the maiden name. I have spent all of my life looking at voting, and some things to me just make so much sense. So here's a what-if question that I've asked members of the Texas legislature. What if a person shows up to vote and they don't have a photo ID? There's technology called smartphones. If we really wanted people to have photo IDs, we could take their pictures when they show up to vote. And that would solve the problem, but nobody in the brilliant Texas legislature thought of that. And just like at the national level, we need to embrace and use technology to allow every citizen to vote. I think we can do that. My grandmother said, and I didn't realize we were poor until I went to college because I grew up in a wonderful black neighborhood where everybody shared. But my grandmother said, that she loved Election Day. She made sure that Big Papa paid the poll tax so that they could vote, and they would take me with them, because she said Election Day is the one time in America when everybody is equal, when a poor man is equal to a rich man, when the woman that cleans the white woman's house has the same vote as the one that owns the house. And so that's a vision in my mind. I'm a baby boomer who believes that this country can be what it says it is. I'm disappointed that we haven't gotten there by now, but I believe we can do it. And the one way we can do it is voting.
Linda Jan Lewis, longtime Texas political and community radio activist. Linda introduced me to this woman.
My name is Genevieve Van Cleve, and I'm the political director for Annie's List.
And Annie's List is?
Annie's List is a state PAC in Texas dedicated to recruiting, training, and electing pro-choice progressive Democratic women.
And a PAC is?
Oh, a political action committee.
Okay. So, now, what do you do as a director of Annie's List? What are you making happen?
Well, I recruited candidates for this election cycle along with it. Look, we don't do this alone. We do this, you know, with a variety of people. But we do a lot of training and looking for candidates. So, for example, in the upcoming primaries, we have two challengers, one in Fort Bend County, a young woman whose name is Angelique Bartholomew. This is her first time running, but she's a mother of five and an education volunteer for many years and does compliance work with doctors and would make a great state representative. One of the reasons she'd be great is that she has had really tough times, like millions of Americans in the crash of 08 and 09. Her and her husband had to declare bankruptcy to keep their home. And for the first time in their married life, they had to rely on CHIP, which is a children's health insurance program. And she saw firsthand how difficult the Republican leadership of the state makes it for people to receive services that they are absolutely qualified for. So if she wins, she's headed to a legislature with a very unique perspective, and she's an African-American woman, and there's so little diversity in the Texas House that she will provide a voice that is completely underrepresented in Texas politics. So we're really looking forward to her beating her opponent if it's at all possible.
So let's continue with this example. What can be done for her to win in the district that she lives in?
In Fort Bend County? Well, we've invested in a race. We've given her $15,000. And that has gone for a professional campaign manager. That money has been used for phone banking. That money has been used for block walking. So a lot of times, women candidates need structure at the very beginning, an injection of cash at the very beginning to get them off the ground. And then let me tell you, I mean, she's used our resources and put in some of her own, has continued to fundraise, and I've never seen somebody work so hard in a grassroots campaign. This is not it's not a big money, big city campaign, but it's a very important position and she's the right person for it.
Now, in her district, is there the voter base there that if she could get them out, she could win?
That's a good question, because it's a Democratic primary. So she's not running against a Republican in the fall. She's running against three male opponents, one of which is the current incumbent, who's been found guilty of barratry, which is ambulance chasing, and is likely to serve a year in jail. I'm not sure if the voters of that district care about those kind of legal issues, but Angelique certainly does. And one of the things that we talked about very early on is not to make his problems a part of the campaign, but that she would like a representative that's actually able to focus on the job at hand and represent the district. I mean, that district has a ton of issues that need to be attended to, large and small. And, you know, if your time is being taken up either serving time or in appeals court, perhaps you're not the right person for the job at the moment. Then the people of Fort Bend deserve someone that can have their full attention.
Yeah. So she's going to maybe win this primary?
And it would probably go to a runoff because there's other candidates. Mm-hmm. So she would probably not win outright, but we would probably go to a runoff with the incumbent, more than likely, if we get there. And that would be decided on May 24th. At that point, because it's a Democratic district, She would be the presumptive legislator.
So in that county, Democrats have been winning consistently.
Actually, in that district, yes. In the county, no. Fort Bend County is one of the fastest growing counties in the state of Texas. In fact, it's home to one of the largest Asian and South Asian populations in Texas and in the country. Unfortunately, failed Republican leadership in Austin has provided us with a map that is so gerrymandered that there are at least one, if not two, Democratic seats in that county that can't be realized because they've cracked and packed diverse voters into places where they become a minority as opposed to a majority of a district.
So gerrymandering, just for the listeners who don't know, is a way of drawing the electoral districts to try to guarantee that some parties will get elected and some parties won't. And they've always done it, but now they do it with computers, so it's very sophisticated.
It's very sophisticated. In fact, we've had the map that we're currently using go all the way up to the Supreme Court and back, and it needs to be redrawn. The case has been upheld. The appellate court has upheld it. And we're simply waiting for the appellate court to act and ask the state to redraw the maps.
Now, I heard that in one case of this gerrymandering, it was a question whether the state would be allowed to redraw it or whether the court would draw it.
Actually, the court will probably draw this version of the map. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just scuttlebutt, I understand that they've hired a couple of map drawers.
This whole issue of gerrymandering is probably the most significant issue with unfair elections in the United States. That's what the OECD observers thought when they observed the 2000 election.
It's incredibly damaging to both parties. You have districts that are drawn to be uncompetitive, and without competition, you have the far end of both parties controlling certain districts, which may or may not serve the populace and the needs of policy cooperation and building coalitions to get things done. So you have people at the far end that simply campaign to the same small group of people that come out in primaries, and people are shoved into districts where they have no geographic or ideological alignment, and it is not to our betterment. I would say also, I mean, gerrymandering is certainly one thing that has profoundly affected American elections, but don't forget that we've lost a big chunk of the Voting Rights Act, and we have almost unlimited money in elections. So regular folks find it very difficult to represent their districts or to hop into public service because it really costs a lot of money to run campaigns on both sides.
Now, you're working statewide. Are you seeing a lot of big money coming into small races in Texas?
Absolutely. You have the Koch brothers that are regularly giving not just to legislative races now, but to city races, which I find amazing and alarming. Another interesting thing that I'm seeing in the polling I look at for different parts of the state is there's been wage stagnation for 10 years now. We're not saving. And I think a lot of Texans have not recovered fully from the downturn in 08 and 09. And those bread and butter issues have risen to the top, have surpassed other issues like access to health care and quality education and fully funding Texas classrooms. And interestingly, while I'm a huge Hillary Clinton supporter, I think we have two very unlikely characters to thank for this, and that's Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump. Because in their own way, they have revealed a sore spot in the country where people do not feel like they are making progress economically. They do not feel secure economically. And I'm seeing it around the state in very small races.
Realistically, what can a candidate promise in terms of those bread and butter wage issues at any level?
Well, at the city and county level, I think there has been some success across the country. You know, you've got Seattle and other cities like that that have increased the minimum wage. I think you could, based on the polling I've seen, I think you could put together probably a bipartisan coalition of people to begin to address those bread and butter issues. It would take some doing. Look, there are 13 women that are endorsed incumbents that are in the Texas House, and one endorsed senator in the Texas Senate.
Endorsed by?
Annie's List. And you'd be amazed how much those ladies get done, even in the political climate that they operate in. I mean, they're not passing omnibus legislation about health care or expanding Medicaid, but they are able to do amazing things for their districts and make a difference in the lives of Texas children and families. I'll tell you one of my favorite examples, something that probably most of us wouldn't think about, is that if you're a ward of the state, if you're a child that's a ward of the state or a foster child, until last session, you had to get the permission of your parents who had no legal claim or may not be in a position or even alive to allow you to become vaccinated. And in so many schools, you can't participate if you're not vaccinated. So Toni Rose, an African-American woman from South Dallas, actually from DeSoto, Texas, helped pass that legislation. Now, did it change the world? No, but it made a huge difference in the lives of kids that most folks don't pay attention to or care about.
So this is what having roots in the community, having ears to the ground, can mean when the legislator gets elected.
Well, and certainly when you have more women in those seats of power at the table, the conversation changes. In any elected body, and this is in any democracy in the world, it doesn't just have to be in the United States, if 30% of that body is women, the tone of the body changes, the work of the body changes, the priorities of the body change. So when women are engaged, sitting at the table when decisions about resources are made, they are bringing up those bread and butter issues that they know affect families, working people, seniors, and children in their communities. You know, you have somebody that understands why you got to pump breast milk between meetings, you know, and a lot of times even our great male allies, and of course we have great male allies, don't have that perspective. The white guys in the Texas legislature are not going to have the perspective that Angelique Bartholomew, an African-American woman from Fort Bend County, is going to have about economic security or getting through hard times or getting kids on CHIP and really understanding what the difficulties are. A lot of those guys just don't have those experiences. And so her experience and her point of view as a woman of color is invaluable. And that's why we want more diversity. We want our democracy, we want this representative democracy to look like the people it's representing. And in Texas, it certainly does not. And actually, it doesn't in the entirety of the United States. I mean, I think 80% or more large city mayors are men, and most of those are white men. The statistics aren't great, so I would encourage anybody to get involved, to understand what campaigns and public service are about. A lot of times women put off the call to service until their young children get a little bit older, but I would say that I grew up in campaigns. My mother took me to Jimmy Carter when I was just barely walking around, and hey, I finished college, you know, I'm not a felon, I did all right. I'm a statewide political director of a women's organization, you know, so that experience for me as a child being involved has turned into a passion that I've turned into a career, and it's civic engagement, getting women involved, and making Texas a fairer place to be.
And that was Genevieve Van Cleve, political director of Annie's List, which supports pro-choice women candidates for political office in Texas. For Wings, I'm Frieda Worden. To hear this and other Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org. Wings thanks all our supporters, including your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, author of The Gift in the Heart of Language, The Maternal Source of Meaning. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.